So basically, this is a session about something that we don't know the answer. So we want to explain what are the difficulties, what are the complications, but we don't know the answer. So what is the problem? We are looking at the nonlinear Schrödinger equation. So this part is just the ordinary Schrödinger equation. And epsilon n is a random function. The epsilon n are independent random variables. And so this is just a one-dimensional Anderson model where we know that with probability 1, all the eigenstates are localized.
I'm confused, sorry. Is there an I missing?
There is an I missing.
Okay.
Yes? Yeah. Okay, so that's the ordinary Schrödinger equation, sorry. And now we had a nonlinear term. And the question is, now, what is the origin of this equation? So you will identify it as the Gross-Pitayevsky equation in this field, and we can argue if it's applicable, if there is this order. I'm not going to discuss this question. Second is it's applicable to optics. When we look in the paraxial approximation, it means when the propagation is in some direction. And psi is basically the electric field, and we look at the nonlinear equation.
So is the question that is it applicable to cold atoms not obvious?
Well, it's not obvious in what regime because of the disorder. So now, however, I will focus on the equation. So we have an equation. We will not discuss the applicability. It means we'll discuss just this equation as an equation and as a paradigm to study the competition between this order that is given by this and the nonlinearity. So this is the question. And the specific question is, you start a wave packet that is localized somewhere in, so this is the lattice, and now it's important that it's on the lattice. So you start in some region of the lattice, you start some localized wave packet, say an eigenstate of the Anderson model that is localized, and the question is, what will happen eventually, asymptotically, in long time? So this is, yes?
More sort of a simple question. So is this, when people say nonlinear Schrodinger equation, that's because it conserves L2 norm?
Yes, I will come, okay. So the conserved quantities are n norm, sum over n psi n squared, and the energy.
Okay, but despite that, the evolution is not unitary. Right, so if I view psi as a wave function,
yes.
Even though somehow it takes one vector in that space into another vector of that space, the evolution is not unitary, is that right?
In what sense? The norm is conserved.
No, but there's no spectrum. Right?
There's no spectrum.
Unitary evolution.
Well, there is. Difficult. There is no spectrum, so we don't ask questions about spectrum.
But that's sort of the thing that. So my understanding is that technically, if you don't have the spectrum, you cannot call it unitary. But is there something like the spectrum or some? So would you call it unitary evolution, unitary and nonlinear evolution?
Well, I don't know. What I'm telling you, what will happen? The norm is conserved.
Yes, I understand.
Okay,
that.
The norm is conserved. And this is what is important for this. So it means I read it. The question is sufficiently focused in what happens. So the question is, I prepare a localized state. Psi is localized in space, and I ask what will happen in the end. So will it spread to infinity or not? And now I will introduce only discuss only terminologies because we don't have much time that are relevant to discuss this question. Okay?
Is So if I understand, if you put a lambda in front of the last term, it means that you know.
Well,
just ask a question. If you put a lambda in front of the last term, just for the sake of simplicity, then you want to know the solution with lambda equal 1 compared to the solution with lambda equal 0. And well, the wave packet you have
1 and 0 is fine, but any other number is also fine.
The point is, the wave packet you are talking of is the solution of your equation when lambda equals 0.
The initial wave packet is localized. Now, it's
but
not...
the solution of this equation?
Is it an eigenstate? Yes, I will, for simplicity, consider an eigenstate where the last term is zero.
Which is, okay, so you start with a wave packet, which is a solution of mathematical equation without a lambda term, yes. The last term, and then you want to understand what makes this lambda term, this last term coming when, let's say, lambda goes from 0 to 1.
Well, and you see, it's not really, the one is not really important because...
No, it's not, because it's scale as epsilon n,
Okay, so this is what we try to understand, if it will spread or not. And then we try to see what will happen asymptotically. And we have here a competition. And the competition is... between two things. Without the disorder, we know it spreads. With the disorder and without the nonlinearity, it's localized. So there is a competition between two possibilities. Now, you see what will happen since the norm is conserved, the nonlinear term becomes smaller, but it involves more and more degrees of freedom. So there's a competition. And now the chaotic behavior basically gets enhanced by having more and more degrees of freedom excited. But it is suppressed by the density going down, the nonlinearity is small. So who will win? So that's a competition. And the problem is, and we are interested in asymptotics. Now, to people that want to ask about relation to experiments, the experiments can be done only for short times. So the experiments are definitely on a much shorter time scale than any of the numerics that we are doing, that were performed, and much shorter definitely of the asymptotics that I'm going to address. The other problem is, usually, when we do numerics, we have a scale that, if we want to do asymptotics, we have a priori a scale that we say, okay, if we succeeded to integrate up to that scale, we are effectively infinity. Here, we just don't know if there is such a scale, and if there is such a scale, we don't know what it is. So, to do this, so to try to make progress on this, what we decided is, this is the work with Arkady Pikovsky, that we try to see, try to do it on a short scale where we'll be able to control the numerics, and to try to extrapolate it to an infinite scale. So the basic idea here is...
were you going to write also the energy?
Well,
is there an energy which is concerned?
It's also not important. I don't want to spend time on it. It's not important for this case.
But the answer is yes, there isn't an
energy,
of course.
Okay.
It's concerned, yes, it's concerned.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's concerned, I don't want to write expressions.
No, it's okay.
And second other thing that we know...
Is conserved when? When is conserved?
Well, you prefer it as a function. Conserved means that it doesn't change as a function of time, it's a constant. But it's not important for this, because there are many questions that I will not discuss in this field that are, because I want to focus on something. The other point is that it's basically assumed that much of the spreading happens, there is an assumption that the spreading is as a result of chaos that is induced by the nonlinear term. So something we will ask, when is the motion regular? So we'll ask, what is the probability of having regular motion? And so I prepare it in a certain initial condition. And what is the probability of having the motion regular, say, for a long time? So this is.
But what do you mean by regular? You will define it.
Yes, regular, I mean zero Lyapunov exponent. Okay, so this is what is meant regular. Now, and I also want to have a small system. So the idea is basically to have, to ask, I will have now a system of length L. L is the length of my system. And I will divide it into subsystems of length L0, where zero is much larger than the localization length of the Anderson problem, that is the length over which the wave function decay exponential. And then, after I divide it, I will ask, I define now the density rho. Rho is n divided by n. So this is a quantity that measures the nonlinearity. Now, I ask, what is the probability of being regular for density rho? Now, I assume that epsilon n goes from minus w to plus w and is uniformly distributed in this interval. So that's the Anderson model. So a function of w, and it's a function of n. And now, I assume that for being regular, it has to be regular in all the intervals. So then I will try an assumption that is rho w and L0 to the power of the number of the intervals. So I assume that they are independent. So this is like in statistical mechanics, I have a system and I divide it in many subsystems. And now, what I will do is that I will, now there is another color, let me see. Okay. So I don't see other colors. So what I will do is I will eliminate the L and will take it to the power of 1 over L. So if this is a justified assumption, the left-hand side will be L-independent. And this is, since I want, and this is something that we verified in the numerical calculation, that's L-independent. So then we can worry about this quantity that we will call basically P0. Thank you. So I will worry about the behavior of this quantity. Now, so I have this quantity P0, and I will write P0 as a function in the following form. I will write it as 1 plus 1 minus Q. So when P0 goes from 0 to, that's a technical point, when P0 goes from 0 to 1, Q goes from 0 to infinity. And that I have a larger range to change it just to check the numerics more reliably. And then I will assume now this problem has two singular limits. One singular limit is W going to 0, and the other singular limit is rho going to 0. So our experience and everyone that went through statistical mechanics knows that this is natural point to introduce a scaling theory. So I assume that Q is 1 over W alpha times Q, small q, of rho divided by w to the beta. So it's not just an arbitrary function, it's a scaling function. And now I have numerically to calculate this, and this is not, this is rho, and I have to calculate the exponents alpha and beta from numerically. I cannot guess them. Yes?
So do you assume that energy doesn't matter for this?
Yeah, it does matter.
Why not?
Well,
I have, actually this is a more general question. If I don't consider these very concentrated initial conditions, but I look at equilibrium dynamics near uniform conditions, I would draw a two-dimensional
This is a different problem. What we study is the zero density problem, while what is standard to study, I did not emphasize it, from the original many body localization picture, there is assumed a picture that's more natural to condensed matter that of uniform density. We don't do it. Our measure average density is zero. So we start from, it's a different problem.
Boundary conditions.
Boundary condition of what?
You have a system of length A.
Very good. So the initial condition in this calculation is assuming rho is basically rho is constant as a function of position. So it's uniform. I start from uniformly distributed. I can do other distributions. We did not do it. It means we have some problems for the future. Okay.
Could you say a bit more about what you mean for the motion to be regular? I mean, does it have to be regular within some
regular? Okay, so the number, I don't want to mention number. We calculate the Lyapunov exponent, and when the numerics, when the Lyapunov exponent was less to the 10 to the minus 6, we decided that it's zero, and this is, and then we did a control, because it depends on how long you run. The control was for several cases, we run it two orders of magnitude more, and it did not change. Okay, so then we have to calculate that. Now this is a singular function. Q of x has two forms. Either it takes the form C1 to the x to the minus zeta, and this is for x going to zero, and or it is C2 x to the minus eta, and that's when x goes to infinity. So these are the two limits. It's the usual use of scaling functions. And then we calculated these numbers numerically. And what we find is that alpha equals beta equals 7 over 4. Then zeta equals 9 over 4, C1 equals 2.5, 10 to the minus 7, and C2 equals 1.8, 10 to the minus 18.
Well, they're supposed to be 0, I thought.
Pardon?
Less than 10 negative 6 is 0. Oh, that's only for Lyapunov.
The first g of x equals to x to the minus zeta when x goes to zero, so it diverges.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, actually, just yes. This is a divergent function, and you see when this diverges, so this will go. This will go to zero, and this is how
sorry, what can be this 10 to minus 18, which parameter it is governed with?
It governs the parameter small q and in a regime where that we are not interested in. So we are not interested in that limit. Okay? So now you don't have to trust me. So now I will show you that it fits the numerics.
And zeta is the same in both limits.
Pardon?
Your zeta is the same.
No, the another limit, it's, no, this is eta, and this is a different exponent.
Okay.
I don't want to cover you with exponents. Eta, we calculated also. eta is 5.2. But we are not interested in that limit. Okay, so now let me basically show you the results.
Is it possible to?
No. We'll show you on the screen.
And is this computed starting from these concentrated initial conditions, or is this computed by starting from?
From uniform.
Uniform.
Yeah, okay, good. So here you see the function that is basically P0 for different lengths and as a function of rho. But now if you scale it, what you find is that all the data collapses. And this shows that I can actually assume that the various intervals are independent.
Can I ask you a little bit more on the methodology here? So P is the probability, you said that it's the Lyapunov's point is non-zero.
Is P is the probability that all the Lyapunov exponents are zero. It's the probability of regular.
Of regular.
Yes.
Okay. So you start with an initial condition.
Yes.
Random.
We start with the initial condition is that rho is uniform. And then for that initial condition is the probability it counts how many realizations are regular.
Realization of the sort.
Of the sort.
Okay. So do the numerical integration and then look at
the instead of numerical integration, you don't have and you calculate the tangent map. It's everything is standard. Now it is there is no problem with these numerics because it's in the regular regime, so you don't have chaos. You can ask in the moment when the Lyapunov exponent, then we stop.
Okay.
So this was the idea. Now we look at the scaling of this function P0, and then we look at Q. But then, when you scale this with these exponents, all the data collapses. So this is a standard way to estimate, to verify that you have scaling. And the reason that, again, that we thought that it's a good idea to have scaling is because we have basically singular limits. And this is what usually, this works in statistical mechanics, it works also in other cases of pattern, of acoustics in optics. So this is something very general. Because what happens, the theory behind this, if you have something singular, the singularity takes over, and the analytical corrections really can be distinguished from this. Okay? So now, close it, and now screen, switch on the light. So then, when you do some of the algebra, and then what you find is, you find what is the probability of being chaotic, and you find the probability of being chaotic, p chaos, that is 1 minus the probability of being regular, is basically w, and this is the limit of a dilute system, is w to the alpha 1 minus zeta divided by C1 times of 0, L, now, L to the 1 minus zeta times N to the zeta, and then this goes basically like L to 1 minus zeta, and this is a negative number. So it falls off like L to the, okay, it falls off.
How much if you fix particle density, that doesn't fall off, it grows with L, is that right?
Pardon?
If you fix N over L, the particle density.
Yes, it grows with the density. It grows with the density. Right. Yes, and that's reasonable, right? So, but now the way that the spreading experiment is done is you fix the norm and let it evolve. Now the norm is fixed and L increases.
Right.
And then what it means is that you end up here with minus 5 over 4, and that means that the probability of, so what it means is that the probability, if you fix a distance L, the probability that you spread the L, it means the fraction of realization for which it will happen, goes down. Okay?
The only thing is that C1, which is very small, yes, is in denominator. So probably this scaling requires L to be bigger than something, right?
No, right. So then, okay, very good. So that is the answer.
But
so,
anyway, 10 minutes.
Okay, so L is when you put everything in, and I will put P chaos to be some reasonable number, like 1 over 10, I'm very generous, and L0, I will put something of order 10. So then, basically, because of the small C1, you will find that L will go to the order of 10 to the 4 or 10 to the 5, that is beyond everything that one so far went, so numerically. So that is basically the result of this calculation. Now the limitation is that there were assumptions here, but the scaling assumptions, if you think about it, are exactly the same assumptions that were made by the theory of the gang of four of localization. They have two limits and then they assume everything. They calculate it in two limits that they know. We don't know to calculate in the other limit. So that what it says now, what will happen in a numerical experiment here, it's very difficult to know because the computer doesn't change what is effectively the realization. So what it, you may jump on the realizations when you spread, and then you will see spreading. You can try to calculate it, but we did not do it. So then let me go to something else, and that is...
Can I ask, so you've written these rational values for the exponents, which implies maybe that you have more than just numerics.
Maybe we did not succeed.
Absolutely.
We did not succeed. We tried to think about it. We did not succeed, but it's open. Yes, I would say that maybe there can be something theoretical. We did not.
Have you checked numerically the statistics of disorder? Are these exponents universal with respect to reasonable changes in the model?
In what is reasonable? Define.
You'll go to Gaussian disorder.
We did not check. We did not check, but
correlations in disorder. Basically, did you change
anything? All correlation disorder, it will be a different game. Okay.
One question. All that says is that if you take a larger and larger system with a smaller and smaller norm, if you want, with the same total norm but smaller norm density, tells that the probability of chaos is smaller. That's what your scaling suggests. However, when you spread from a small wave packet to a big one, you might always end up in that part of your kind of phase space of this of your considerations,
maybe,
where you are caught. Which means that this doesn't necessarily even tell that there is an upper bound to a wave packet if it starts to spread.
Well, what you would say that maybe that there is a situation that this wave packet chooses in some way the root. Well, for this, what you will have to do is to check it with different initial conditions that we didn't do. So it means it does not complete the story, but it gives an indication.
But let me ask, what I miss in your logic is that you found scaling numerically at distances smaller than this critical distance at which you can use this formula. Mm-hmm. So you have characteristic length scale below which you have scaling. But who told you that if you have characteristic scale in your problem, that at length bigger, you still keep having the scale?
It's an excellent question. This is an assumption, and you know, this is an assumption that was very successful in several theories. That was not really checked. It took a long time to check it. This is what you do, for example, if you want, you do critical phenomena, and you do a theory for critical phenomena, and you check it numerically.
No, but for a localization problem, we believe that scaling at lengths smaller than localization or correlation is different from what is going on.
Yeah, because there are two limits. They check the two limits. It was never proved, for example, that it's a monotonic function, that it's crucial for this game. So it means it was checked for two limits, where it's localized, and by some diagrams where it was a metal, near the metal. Otherwise, it was not. It was checked in the two ends. I don't know to do that second.
Well, I'm not sure what's this. So you've checked it by looking at the statistics of getting regular regions in segments of L naught.
Yes.
But then you assume statistical independence.
No, it was not assumed. It was checked by scaling. So it was checked that, what is this?
What are your scaling variables?
No, it was checked that this function,
right,
the left-hand side, is L independent.
Right.
So if it's L independent, means that that this is correct. Because the elements are independent. And this is, so because what you say, that if it's regular, you have small segments where it's regular. Now the logic of this is localization is regular in this game.
My question, in which way you create your uniform initial distribution? Because you have phase. So what does it mean? Density is constant.
Well, you take the wave function. Okay, you take psi to be the same quantity, so that the square. You didn't put phases there.
Yes.
The phase is zero.
Yes. And then the question is.
Okay. Well, how sensitive was not checked.
Oh. Okay. So you don't actually sample the ensemble.
The ensemble that is sampled is the ensemble of random systems. So the epsilons are changed. The ensemble is varying the epsilons.
That's a different question.
It's a different question. One initial condition changing the. Okay. So. Okay. So let me. If you don't mind, I will just tell you the two other results. So something else that we did, and I will just tell you the result. We will assume that the wave function, the norm is kept to one, but we put a parameter beta, that is a small parameter. We do perturbation theory in beta, and what we find is basically that, and this is a perturbation theory where you can control the remainder, and the remainder on each, so now you expand the wave function in a, let me not enter maybe to this, you have an estimate of the remainder, where the remainder is small, and it's estimated by a constant, times the time, times E, to the minus gamma. Gamma is the inverse localization length, psi n. So what it means that basically for very long times you have a front x that goes like log t divided by gamma, behind which the wave function is exponentially small. We don't know what happens before. Now, our problem is, there are two problems that we have. We don't want to control the constant n in a reasonable way for mathematicians to be satisfied. And the second is that we don't know to do the calculation. It is a bound that is based a posteriori on that you calculated the wave function for the lower orders. Now, we could go only in a reasonable way to the fifth order. And then the time for which it holds is not long enough to get to the regime where Sergei will explain you that he finds interesting results. So we cannot comment on that. And finally, if you allow me a few minutes, I will tell you what are the rigorous results that mathematicians have. So, and this is, I must say, I don't understand the proof, but what they do is, now the bottom line is that their conjecture, they believe that the spread is at most logarithmic in time. And I will tell you why. So what they do is they add here another parameter, J, and they set W to be 1. And then in that setup, they show the following. And this is Wang and Zhang. They show the following, that they define the parameter epsilon, not related to our epsilon, that is J plus beta. And W is 1 in their case. And then they say, okay, let's start with the initial condition psi of now. Psi, they call it what is it, J at time t equals to 0. So that the square of this for J larger than some value r is smaller than delta, that is much smaller than 1. Then, if so, for all positive delta and a, there are constants. Ca and an epsilon of a and the Ka, so that then the Ka is larger or equal to a square, that is for time that is smaller than delta over Ca and epsilon to the minus a. The sum of psi at j and t squared for j larger than r plus k. So k is the additional spread. It equals, it's smaller than 2 delta. So, and with a probability that's very close to 1. They have an estimate of this probability. So you see from here that the time is here, and this is an epsilon to the minus a, so there is a logarithmic front beyond which everything is exponentially small, that log t equals the log of epsilon in absolute value times a, and a is related to the spread, because A is related to the K. So on the basis of this, they say a conjecture, they don't know to prove. The conjecture on the basis of this is that very far, the spreading is logarithmic. Now the assumption that was made here is that basically the randomness is very strong, because J, these things get scaled one compared to the other. So if the hopping and the nonlinearity is very weak, so it's the same like saying that the randomness is very strong. So in general, mathematicians know to prove everything for very small randomness. And then again, they have this logarithmic bound that we basically had in our perturbation theory, except it's not rigorous. But on the other hand, we don't have to assume that the randomness is arbitrarily small. So then, another result very famous mathematicians have, is that if you replace beta by epsilon to 1 plus x to the alpha, then for each alpha, the spread is slower than any power of time. This is Bourgain 1. Now, so that is, since in some way, so this is the, so also on that, the conjectures of mathematicians is that basically they support that the spreading is at most logarithmic asymptotically. Now, it's not proven. Now, and my belief is, in the end, to resolve it, it will be an issue of mathematics. It means it will be very difficult in other ways. And what they tell me, that in order, when I was telling about this in Princeton, I was okay. So then Bourgain tried to do it, and the claim is to prove it, but the claim he has to invent a new method of analysis. So that's what it's raised. It's a very difficult problem, and other mathematicians in such a situation will not touch it before that method is improved. But sometimes they succeed to do different things. That it means much of chaos that we now have a feeling because of computers actually came out of work of Poincaré without doing any computation, just proving theorems. But this says something only on something asymptotic, there is a whole wide regime that is much larger than the regime that is relevant for the experiment, for which numerics are extremely relevant. And Sergei will tell you about it. Okay, good. Thank you. The computer.
No, I don't.
Okay.
Okay. So after school, basically, finish the story of spreading. I will basically just say that probably there's still something to say, because when you switch on your computer, you typically see more or less the opposite. I'm probably wrong. Do I have this here?
Yes, for the record.
First, can I just quickly, whilst you're putting this on, I'm confused. So, first of all, you SMA, I want to keep the density finite and take the system to infinity. There, it seems the probability of encountering chaos is growing without a bound at p sub ch. Right. So, if I fix n over rho to be a small constant but finite,
if you fix rho forever, then
So, do these other results, the mathematicians and not pretend, do they ever?
No, they study
only
zero density.
Zero density, okay, good.
Yeah. They study only the zero density.
I just want to establish the absence of localization and finance.
It's a zero density. I think they have also results, but I'm not sure about it, about the standard problem of fermions. Your case, do they have a claim about what will happen there if you do zero density?
No. Who has?
No.
Who studies fermions? Mathematicians study fermions?
No. Well, there is some stuff that Eisenman was doing in relation to this. I just.
Eisenman was doing beta lattice.
Yeah,
it's a beta lattice.
Okay. Yeah, so it's.
Okay.
Okay, so maybe I can add
two little comments on what the... Please leave it, I'll just erase it as time goes on. So I just want to make two comments on this again. So what Shmuel said here is that if you take larger and larger pieces of your nonlinear system, and with the same total norm, which is just the classical version of the number of particles of a quantum system, then since the density decreases, somehow at some point the probability of having a chaotic dynamics will decrease, and you will see more and more probable regular dynamics. I want to stress again, doesn't tell you what happens necessarily in a non-equilibrium experiment when you now release, when you suppose you have a chaotic trajectory with a small probability, but you found this kind of disorder realization, you have your chaotic trajectory, you remove the walls, and you let now this wave packet expand into infinities. It might always, according even to such a statement, stay on that chaotic and escape to infinity, belonging at larger times and smaller densities to another set of still non-zero set of chaotic trajectories, which you would have harder time to realize from scratch, taking that larger system and throwing the dice and trying to find the chaotic trajectory. But you are actually already on that. So that's actually another possibility. And there's another issue, which is the cutoff in the Lyapunov coefficient number, which I'm not sure whether that's relevant or not. But in some sense, you cut off weaker chaos in these scaling attempts. So, and then I also want to comment just on the question. There were questions, what is the meaning of this equation? And you can turn it the other way around. You take such an equation and you quantize it. And you end up immediately with, you take the Hamiltonian, and quantize the Hamiltonian. And you end up with the Bose-Hubbard model. Well, then you can play with it and think what Bose-Hubbard has common with real life. But that sort of shows you a bit the relevance of these issues to some of the topics here at this meeting. So I just want to give you a bit of a broader view, but come back then again to this issue of spreading, which Shmuel already discussed. So I just want to say something about nonlinear Hamiltonian lattice waves, which is what we are discussing. So basically what all this is about systems being close to integrable. All these interesting questions here appear because we get close to integrability. And one way of viewing that is to say that if we are close to integrable means that you have, some Hamiltonian, which is some integrable part which depends on many actions, say a countable set of actions, and then some non-integrable perturbation, which depends, of course, both on this set of actions and also on the angles. And you can now what I want also to you to how I want you to look at that is that you have a countable set of actions, you have a countable set of degrees of freedom of the integrable system. This could be, for instance, the eigenstates of the linear Schrödinger equation, which we have seen before. It could be also simply a set of oscillators or of rotors, for instance. It could be can be anything. We just essentially, this is a sum over little Hamiltonians, where each little Hamiltonian depends only on one action. And then we can imagine that we have this kind of lattice of these actions. Each point in our lattice it corresponds to one degree of freedom, and I think Boris probably has shown these such figures already in relation to the quantum problems. And now this non-integral perturbation essentially couples these degrees of freedom, these actions, in some way on such a lattice. The difference to the quantum problem is that we study at the end of the day a nonlinear set of coupled differential equations, which means that either these couplings between the actions have to end up with in nonlinear terms in the equations of motion,
Or, for instance, also the individual Hamiltonians of each degree of freedom should be already should keep this nonlinearity in them, which means basically that either H0 should be a nonlinear function of J, or this nonlinearity is stored in the coupling. If not, then you actually couple, say, linear modes with some linear bonds, so you basically still can reduce the problem to an eigenvalue problem, which is exactly not what we want to consider here. So examples, as I mentioned, are you take a system, a linear wave equation, a single particle wave equation with Anderson localization with disorder, but you also can take a quasi-periodic potential. I think next week we'll hear talks about that by Zsora Shliapnikov probably. And the linear Schrödinger equation, I'll come back to that again, is also nicknamed Aubry-André problem. And then you can add on top of that again these nonlinearities. But you can also look at a problem which is called Fermi-Pasta-Uhlan problem, which is the same story actually, just a bit. All the difference between these things is either in the connectivity between these degrees of freedom, or in the spectral properties of the integrable path. But you could also yes.
Fermi-Pasta-Uhlan problem doesn't have any disorder.
No, but it is a problem from the same class. You'll see in a second. I'll say a few words about that right now. Or you could also consider, for instance, just some weakly coupled unharmonic oscillators or rotors, which is basically what is considered in these papers of Boris and Lev Joffe, and I don't remember the other co-authors. Yes. And there it has, again, some other physical background, but mathematically it's similar to that. And maybe I should also say that, of course, there's not much NBL here probably, because that's a classical nonlinear problem. But as you know, there is some interesting expected life outside of the NBL phase in the so-called non-ergodic bad metal. So there might be, which and this phase is probably can survive also in some classical H bar going to zero limit of a quantum many body system. So it could well be that there is some touching points here in the properties, strange properties of such classical nonlinear systems close to integrability, and with some of the phases of this MBL business. Right, now there was already the question that FPU is totally different. Well, let me just show you. It is, of course, not a disordered system, but nevertheless, it actually, as you will see, is in the same class. And I want to mention this just to show you that we are not just talking about one equation. Okay, the equation of motion are the following. We have some coordinates x. We have a coupling between nearest neighbors, basically harmonic springs, and then we have nearest minus a nonlinear part or unharmonic part in this spring potential. So that means basically that you have masses which are coupled by strings and so on. And they can move only in one direction, and the spring potential has a quadratic part. This corresponds to this term. And it has a higher order part, say a cubic part, which corresponds to that. So what Fermi, Pasta, and Uhlan did is they put the whole thing into a box. So they had a finite system. They excited the lowest lying mode in that system, which is a half sign. It's an exact solution of the linear part of the equation. And then they wanted to see how it couples to the other modes. Why should it? Because you can immediately write down the same equations in normal mode space. So you basically transform your equations into the representation of the eigenvectors of the linear wave equation, and then this capital Q, little sub Q, are the amplitudes of a normal mode with a order number little q, which is, if you wish, a wave number, but you can sort them as you want. And then there is some prefactor here on the right-hand side, which depends on the size of the system, which is n. And then you have here such funny sums over L and from 1 to n, and then you have many products of eigenfrequencies, then still some matrix element, and then you have a product of two amplitudes, and that makes the whole differential equation. Again, nonlinear.
Square terms, there is plus or minus between them?
There is a minus, if I wrote it correctly.
Minus? Which one?
Why minus?
No, because the potential is xn minus xn minus 1 to the power 3, let's say, plus x. And plus 1 minus xn to the power 3 plus, and here's of course an alpha or something like that.
But yeah, I was going to ask, so the sign doesn't matter, okay, because that potential is always unstable.
Pardon? Yeah, that potential is unstable, but we don't, we don't, fine, it's fine, good comment. You can replace the whole thing by quartic terms and then go to cubic nonlinearities. The point is you can well work with these quadratic terms as long as your amplitudes are not too big. You just escape.
Can I ask a question? So, it's hard to know what Fermi was thinking, but I always assumed that Fermi was interested in the sorts of questions like mean by localization. In other words, Fermi was interested in initializing with initial conditions that have finite energy density, finite energy per particle.
No, Fermi wanted first to see that the simplest explanation of thermal equipartition, which we enjoy in our everyday life,
yes,
can be obtained through simply adding mode-mode interactions.
Okay. That's that
in a Hamiltonian setting.
No, but that requires starting with an initial energy which is extensive.
No, that requires nothing. He has a finite system, so everything is finite.
No, energy
he has a finite system, so everything is finite.
Later, finite L
system. Later, you can later you can look what happens when you scale.
So the question, it's going back to Schmuck's talk. The question is, what do you hold fixed that you change the system?
Well,
size?
You can do that later. But they started with a finite system. They had a
16 and 32. My assumption was that, in fact, they changed the initial conditions so that the energy density was.
But the problem is that they ran into a problem before they started to change the system size. Yeah, and the problem for them was that they somehow estimated that for that size of the system with those initial conditions. By the way, let me just write this. Oh my God, Q plus minus L plus minus N, zero. Let me just write down these coupling coefficients because I want. I just want to emphasize that and then I come to your issues. That there is a coupling, there is a selective coupling, as you see. Not all modes are talking to each other. One given mode Q talks to certain other pairs of modes, which is defined by this expression here. But the point is, it's essentially long range, so there is no notion of a distance in your space of normal modes. So even distant modes can somehow be coupled to each other, and that's very different from, for instance, the nonlinear Schrödinger equation with disorder, where the modes are localized in space, and also the overlap integrals or the coupling between the modes due to nonlinearity is, of course, has a finite range. But here it's not the case, but nevertheless, let's see what happens. And so what they did is they estimated, according to some ideas, their parameters that launching such a lowest lying mode should, after some reasonable time, lead to an equipartition state in that finite system. And the surprise was that it didn't. What they saw is that if you plot here, say, the energies of the normal modes, on the log scale versus the mode number, and you start somewhere here with the lowest one, 0 or 1 or whatever you call this, what you find is a distribution. Very quickly, there is a kind of a distribution which is essentially exponential, shows exponential tails. For quite long times, nothing else happens. Then there are some oscillations, of course, inside, and revivals and so on, and which is even more confusing. So basically, they didn't observe equipartition, and they were very much puzzled by that fact. What actually happens if you go on and on in time, and you believe that you are not studying the physics of round of errors on your computer, but something which is really inherent to these equations, what you find at later times is that actually this distribution will change, and at very large, long times, you might actually end up with an equipartition state. And if you look closer, you might even find that this transfer of energy from the strongly excited modes into the weakly excited modes happens to be most probably an incoherent. So it's based on chaos. You can even go further and compare this these results, which are more, which have been obtained much later than, of course, the Fermi-Pasta-Ulam experiments. You can compare this to the evolution of a system with equations which are exactly like that, plus some higher order terms here. You add cubic, quartic, quintic, and so on terms, such that you exactly actually match the total lattice potential. And as you know, the total lattice is an integrable system. Up to these orders, it looks exactly the same, and then there are further terms. When you repeat the same numerical experiment with the total lattice, what you find is that you will always stay localized here. Right?
Is the time scale known?
Numerically, for some parameters, people have studied that, how it scales, how the second. So there's a second time scale, right? So there's a first time scale when you, let's call it T1, when you see the formation of this localized structure. And there is a second time scale, T2, which is potentially much, much larger than T1, at which you might observe finally equipartition. So the question is, how is T2 depending on the parameters? We don't know. There are some numerical calculations how it scales with things. But what we do know, with some also uncertainty, but also with some certainty, is that T2 will be roughly of the order of T1 at a threshold energy of the initial state, which you put into your system, which divided by n will be proportional to, well, I shouldn't write here pi to the 4, but I just write it because it's almost a factor of 100, divided by alpha squared n to the 4.
Right.
So what you find is that in the limit of n going to infinity, the density, the critical density below which these funny things happen, should pretty quickly disappear.
N to the 4. That depends on the nonlinearity, or is it kind of quasi-universal? I get it.
That's for this model.
For this, the cubic.
Yeah. And if you take other models, then, I mean, if you replace this, if the leading order nonlinear term has a higher order, let's say it's cubic, then these expressions, of course, will change.
So if I took the total lattice and weakly broke the equilibrium total lattice.
Yes. Well, that's it. You, for instance, end up here. You just throw out all these little terms there with a weak perturbation. You take the total and then you add something which exactly cancels all these higher order terms, which are
weak. No. So if you want the higher order term, and then you just perturb the higher order terms by a little bit, so it's no longer classically integrable.
Yeah,
do I see?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. In some sense, I would say yes. In some sense, if you write down here this infinite series, which brings it to total, and all these terms are small, so basically what I tell you here, if you cancel them all, then you see that. But I would say yes, I expect at least. I mean, you.
Is there any, I mean, if I have total interval, I don't see any, I never see equipartition.
Well, that's
no matter how long a time I run it to.
Yes.
But if I weakly break it in some sense,
if you break it weakly, how should I say that? Weakly strong or strongly weak or whatever. So, I mean, if it's too weak, you won't see anything in the numerical simulation on the computer. Because times are either infinite or huge, and you won't see nothing.
Well, no, I guess I'm wondering if there's I need to break it by a certain strength
Very good question. Yeah. So the question is whether there is a threshold.
Yes.
And the question is whether there's a threshold here. And we know from Kamm that in principle, something happens. So when epsilon is very small, you are in a Kamm regime, which very loosely means that there's a finite probability to be on a regular trajectory. This is what we heard from Shmuel. And of course, a complementary probability, which is very small when epsilon is small, and scales somehow with epsilon, God knows how, on which you are when you are not on a regular trajectory. And then there's a critical value of epsilon when the probability to be on a regular trajectory becomes essentially or completely zero. And that would be.
Is there something like this?
Well, at least there are many claims, and in small systems with a few degrees of freedom, we know that happens.
I know that for example, for the Kit Kotto, there was such a conjecture that Sinai tried to prove for a long time, and he did not succeed. So.
Yeah, I mean.
Sorry, can I?
Yeah.
So if I take the cubic FPU at low energies, and if I sort of appeal to some kind of a continuum limit, it's a different integrable model. It's KdV, as many people know. So is there a way of deriving these kinds of equations by taking the continuum limit and perturbing the KdV?
This one here, I don't think so, because.
Okay.
But I didn't read.
Because the things that you throw out are Umlaut processes and things like that. So
you throw out many things.
Yeah.
So you basically.
Is there a way to?
Not only that. This is the first step. This doesn't bring you to KdV. You do that, and then you throw out propagation forward, and you separate propagation forward and propagation backward in time. So you do more approximation.
But we're actually.
But it's all valid points. So what I can tell is that KdV and let's say the TODA, they will all tell you very nicely these profiles here. So the dynamics up to T1 is essentially integrable dynamics.
Can I just, since the two of you were just mentioning KM, so if I have a finite, this is a sort of basic question. if I have a finite system, classical system, my understanding of KM is that I can integrate to late infinite times, and I can sharply draw a boundary between regular and chaotic regimes in as a function of energy, for example, tuning parameter. Yes? So I can look at the phase space of a classical few-body system, and I can draw a sharp boundary by integrating it at to late times and deciding this one is regular, this one is not regular.
I don't know how you do that. I mean, if it's...
Well, otherwise, I
think it's not correct.
No.
The reason that it's not correct, like this, is that if you assume you have a periodic trajectory, you have two periodic trajectories that are preserved by KM. Between them, there is a rational period where it will be destroyed. So what KM, the only thing that it says, that the measure of there is a finite measure of trajectories that are regular that will be kept, and the measure will approach one when the perturbation goes 0 to 0. By measure, a finite measure doesn't mean that in between nothing happens. The contrary, the standard Poincaré-Birkhoff scenario is that there will be tiny regimes of chaos with very long period. There will be, when I talk next time about mixed systems, I will explain it. So it there is something that you see in numerics, but there is something that the theorem says.
Okay. So here are some open problems. We don't know, as already asked, we don't know what the parameter dependence of T2 is, how does it scale, no analytics at all. Is there, even in these small finite systems, relatively small systems like 32 particles or whatever, is there a Kamm regime? We tried hard, we couldn't find. So it's a real delicate issue to see that numerically. We don't know at all anything about the dynamical mechanisms which lead to this heating, if you want, which I think is a kind of an incoherent process of these tail modes. And then just as a provocative question, if you go, you can quantize this problem as well, of course. the Hamiltonian, and then the question is there some room for finite system MBL that I don't know. It's just for fun. Don't beat me for that. So with that said, I just wanted to show you that there are problems outside of disorder systems where in this classical nonlinear dynamics framework, you have exactly the same issues and the same problems. And if you can answer, if you know how to answer them here, you might also have a way to answer them in other cases. So now coming back to disordered systems, here's again this equation which Schmuel wrote down already. I just generalized it a little bit. I assume it can be in a d-dimensional lattice space. And the nonlinearity maybe can be also must not be cubic, but could be anything. You know, once we forget about physics, we are free to choose anything we want. And we have some here. This is a discrete Laplacian, which tells me how I am connected on that lattice. So again, when beta is zero, then you can solve the problem and say assume that all the eigenstates are localized if the disorder is strong enough. And then you switch on beta, and this nonlinearity will, very similar to that nonlinearity, induce a coupling, a nonlinear coupling between the modes of the linear system. And what I want to say is that if you now really start to read what has been all produced in the literature in that kind of field, you will find that there are many models which have been discussed. And they are different. And so you have to be very careful when you quote results from one model class, thinking that that is true for all of them. And the differences are, for instance, in the number of integrals of motion. So this equation here always conserves energy and norm. But I can also immediately write down an equation like that one, which conserves energy, but I don't see any norm which it does conserve. I can write down equations of coupled unharmonic oscillators in a random potential. I can do that. And I can study the same question, but I have a model which conserves only one integral of motion. I can have different powers of nonlinearity.
I don't understand. What is the special? What is special about the last term in this equation? Because it resembles the first one. No. It is the sum over all. Okay.
It's a sum over some suitably defined nearest neighbor, whatever network. Yeah. Then there's of course the space dimension, in which we embed that. And what is very important is the connectivity between normal modes. So very often there are you can find a lot of different numerical studies where this connectivity is different, and then you have to be very careful when you compare things with each other. Right. So if we go back to, let's say now, just to wrap it up, I don't know how much time do I have.
Well, it depends on listeners, because we're only exhausted 1 hour.
Okay, guys. Okay, let's go back to the one-dimensional Schrödinger equation with sigma equals 2 for the moment. Then I want to say that we can study this equation where now I have a potential epsilon L, where L is an integer, for instance, where epsilon L is random. This is what Schmuel said. But I can also choose epsilon L equal to lambda times cosine 2 pi alpha L plus some beta plus some phi. That's Aubry-André. That's a quasi-periodic potential on a lattice. If lambda is larger than 2 and the Hopping strength is 1 or whatever, so if lambda is larger than the critical value, all states are localized for the linear wave equation for that potential. I can again ask the same question, which Schmuel already mentioned. And finally, there's another example, which is simply E times L, so called, I think, Vanier-Stark model ladder or whatever, so mimicking some kind of electrical field, if you want, so potential which grows linearly along the chain. And then again, all eigenstates are localized for the linear wave equation, and the nonlinearity will couple them, and you can again ask the same question. Right, so now let me say a few words about what happens in most of these models when you study spreading of wave packets numerically. Maybe I should write down here, just for completeness, equations of motion in normal mode space. Whatever the eigenvalue spectrum of your linear wave equation is, phi nu is the amplitude of the nth eigenmode. And then you have something like this with some overlap integrals, and you know very well what these crocodiles are, because you see them also when you study the connectivity of a many-body system in Fock space. You get the same creatures times phi mu 1, phi mu 2, phi mu 3, 1 star. Yeah, and this is an overlap integral, which is a sum over products of four different eigenvectors of the linear wave equation. And therefore, you see that in all these problems, we will have a finite range of nonlinear interaction between the normal modes because the eigenvectors are localized in real space. Good. With that said, what do you see when you switch on your computer? You start with a wave packet, which is can be anything, single site excitation, one normal mode of the linear wave equation, 10 normal modes, a wave packet which is somehow broad enough, whatever. Whatever you start with, you always have, of course, to say how big is your beta, how much norm do you put into your initial state. And then if you play around, it's not hard to find spreading, which means that this thing will start to spread as time goes on.
Is it now real space or normal space?
This can be either real space or normal mode space, because you can now we didn't define how we sort the normal modes. If I sort them with respect to their position in real space, it's basically the same thing. And then what you can calculate is, say, the second moment of the distribution of psi n squared as a function of time. And here we have, in terms of numbers at least, much less problems than in the quantum case. We can, in principle, simulate 100,000 sites, not a problem. And we can go in times up to, in principle, this is base 10, up to 10, where the typical time scale is of order 1. And what you see is, let me just show you the most prominent example. You see something like this. Well, some fluctuations. You run a single trajectory. You see that something grows. Of course, if your nonlinearity parameter is too weak, you might see nothing, which might be just because you didn't reach the time when something happens, or because nothing happens. Then you can also see such things when the time, when the nonlinearity becomes a bit bigger, and then you finally shift this. You shift these onsets here, this crossover point, to shorter times, and you see it from scratch. If you go to very strong nonlinearities, you see non-perturbative effects due to the nonlinearity, especially living on a lattice wave equation, which I don't want to talk here about, so we don't want to see that. If you look at this slope here, you find something very close to 1/3, 1/3. So it looks like a spreading that the second moment grows as t^(1/3). The wave packet at the very end.
This is in one dimension.
This is in one dimension, and this is with cubic nonlinearity just for the wave equation, which Shmuel wrote down. And if you look here at the end points of these simulations, you find that the width of this wave packet, whatever I want to call this, L, let's say, L is can be as big as maybe 300 times, 300 times the single particle localization length. And we are not much restricted here in terms of disorder either. We can choose a disorder where the localization length is 6, where the localization length is 10, 20. It's all doable because we can treat pretty big lattices. We'll just have a problem that we have to stop too soon because things spread out, and at some point we cannot support. We will see finite size effects. And if you now...
Are these dynamics, if you try to estimate Lyapunov exponents by running forward and backward in time, are these dynamics basically chaotic? But
yes, they are chaotic.
But localized in space, that's interesting.
What do you mean by localized?
Well, they're not spreading. If that trajectory sits there for 5 decades in time and then starts spreading, I'm asking on those time scales, like, yeah, take that trajectory. Is the Lyapunov exponent has units of 1 over time? Is that time scale shorter or longer than? Once it's sitting there, is it more or less?
I don't know, but I think it will be at least of the order of this time.
Yeah, my feeling is that there are these cases where you have localized but chaotic trajectories.
Yeah.
I propose that let Sergei finish. How much time do you need?
Well, maybe this is my last formula here, which I write
down.
So what we seem to find is the following: that when this parameter beta times a little n. Now, what is little n? Little n is a typical norm density. Is larger than a little d. Now, what is little d? Little d is the average spacing of these eigenvalues of the linear wave equation in a localization volume. So basically, you take the set of all strongly connected eigenmodes, and they all have some eigenvalues, and then you look at the spacing. And that's a number little d. And so when beta times n is less than little d, then we find this t⁓. And you, of course, have to do averaging over thousands of realizations. And there are various methods how you can try to extract these exponents. And we are pretty sure that we, at least on these timescales on which we run the computations, that we get a 1/3 with a very, very good accuracy, 0.33 plus minus 0.02.
But how do you match them when BU is of the order D? I mean, do you have 1/2 or 1/3?
No, what I'm saying is that if we are in this regime, then we see very well that there is a t⁓. There can be an intermediate regime at higher densities, which is called strong chaos. And, well, this here is weak chaos. And this strong chaos is at best intermediate, because if you spread, then the densities go down in time. And as the density goes down in time, at some point you have to cross over into the weak chaos regime. Yeah? So these are the two possibilities which we find, and we can actually generalize this to higher lattice dimensions and to different powers or these exponents sigma there, and obtain predictions. I mean, this is based on something. This is not just numerics. This is based on something which is not
a... What is T2 here?
What is what?
T2. The time that we defined before, that's T2.
I think it could be this one here. It could be this one when you are in this at these relatively weak nonlinearities. Yeah, because you see on up to these times you see almost nothing, and then you start to see that then you start to excite new modes. And if you crank up the nonlinearity, then this T2 becomes small, and you see again that the T2 can vary over quickly over orders of magnitude. Right? And so we can generalize this to higher dimensions and powers of nonlinearity, and then do computations. And we did computations for the disordered system, for 1 and 2 dimensions, also with the disordered system for different powers of nonlinearity. We varied them. And we also looked at the Aubry-André case. And we looked at the Vanier-Stark case, and we looked even at another case, which is called dynamical localization, which is the quantum-kicked rotor, where you have localization in momentum space, where again, you can just by hand add some proper nonlinearity and now iterate nonlinear maps. And so we studied that problem as well. And the answer is that except for the Vanier-Stark case, all these studies numerically show us that we observe the asymptotic spreading with an exponent 1/3 in these one-dimensional cases, of course, or the corresponding generalizations to higher dimensions, different exponents of nonlinearity, and so on. Up to the times we can do things, and therefore this is asymptotics only up to these maximum times. The only difference is Vanier-Stark. In the case of the Vanier-Stark ladder, as you know, the spectrum of the linear equation is unbounded and equidistant. And we still see spreading, but the exponents are not described by our, if you wish, kind of theory. And we have some arguments why that is the case, but I have no understanding how to generalize that. So that is the state of the art. So what is remaining then to say is, what are the open questions? Because this was actually the reason why I think we were asked to present here. So let me just read this to you instead of writing it. So the first question is, will this spreading here stop or cross over into a very slow logarithmic type spreading, as Shmuel explained? Shmuel has some arguments from the scaling, some scaling arguments. From the numerical observation of spreading, I can honestly tell you, we tried hard to find a slowing down. That would be interesting. We couldn't. So far, we couldn't. So in all our cases where we looked at spreading, we don't see any slowing down from the 1/3. So is there a new regime at later times and length scales or not? I don't know. If there isn't, then this means, let's assume for a second that there isn't. Okay, all the mathematicians, which are still somewhere there, will immediately kill me, but they're not here. So if there isn't, then that means that I will penetrate into a CAM regime of much larger system sizes. So I kind of have a universal simple way how to send my trajectory into something into some huge phase space where chaos is very rare, where I have Arnold diffusion, but I start from another much smaller system size where it's easy for me to initiate the chaotic trajectory. It could be at least a possibility. It would be nice. Then what else can we say? So, I mean, in terms of comparison to the quantum problems, well, there is a crossover here between strong and weak chaos. There could be another crossover to logarithmic spreading or something like that, as advocated by Shmuel. Is any of these crossovers, what does it mean in terms of the quantum system? Is that some kind of bad metal, or is that which will come here a bad metal? And if yes, then what is this, and so on. So
first of all, if it's quantum, then number of particles is finite and L is infinite. You cannot.
No. Sure. I'm not okay. Fine. When I say quantum, I don't mean spreading. Because what follows from here, okay, I didn't say that. If you take this a bit more seriously, what follows from here is that there is a diffusion coefficient which characterizes how the excitations diffuse. And this diffusion coefficient will depend in different ways on the densities. And now I can actually say that, or assume that this is true also for an infinite system with a finite density, and I can measure, for instance, conductivities. And we did that for one, but not for the nonlinear Schrödinger equation, but for another kind of these models with only one integral of motion. And we do find that the heat conductivity.
With the Sorrow in the Quinn model.
No, it's in a disordered model. Same disordered model, but it's just without conservation of norm. Only energy is conserved. And what we find is, well, here temperature really means just the density, the energy density. We see that the kind of the onset of going down to zero at small temperatures, which is something like this. We actually also see the going down at high temperatures, which is the analog of your rotor non-ergodicity problem with coupled rotors. So in that sense, I can claim that that I know something about the finite density infinite system, and then I can ask the question. Mm-hmm. And again, if there is something else down here, there's something else again in terms of the diffusion coefficient. Yeah, and then what else? Well, there are little things, and the basic thing, which is also always thrown into the debate, is that all on the physics of round of errors on a computer, or is that actually something real? So
you ask this question and
I
don't have an answer.
No, I don't have an answer. Of course, you can ask me what my religion is in that case, and of course I will tell you that I don't. We tried hard to check that it is not an effect of round of errors, but I would.
It's a controlled experiment. You do controlled experiments to check that.
Numerical experiment.
Yeah, so you can change
yes,
round
on
of
a
errors.
Computer.
Yes.
which are.
That's the last comment. I think there is really a fundamental problem because it has an infinite number of degrees of freedom. So basically, the theoretical foundation is not too solid for this. And why is this? Because really you don't solve on the computer the equation. Because if you will integrate it back, you will not return to the same point.
You will not.
Because of chaos. Because of the instability. Now, that's what you say, but always we do it in chaotic systems to calculate like this. But then there's another finite degree, number of degrees of freedom, and phase space is bounded. It's bounded. The theory that was developed by mathematician works. Then there are a few things that justify it to do it. And that is basically something that's called the shadowing lemma. The shadowing lemma basically says that near each of these trajectories, there is a true trajectory, but you cannot find it. Mm-hmm. And then what you do in the computer experiment, you do Monte Carlo sampling of the space. So if you want to know the Lyapunov exponent, or the Kolmogorov entropy, you know it for that case.
This is what people in celestial mechanics do.
Yes, and they have a finite number of planets at the time.
Yeah.
Here, the number of degrees is infinite, and therefore, maybe it's correct.
But we discussed this issue a few years back, where I asked you, I came to you specifically and asked, is there a shadow lemma for two-time power?
Let's thank Shmuel and Sergei for...